Welcome to the December IASB podcast, where we bring you the latest insights from our recent IASB meeting. I am Andreas Barco, Chair of the IASB.
And I am Linda Mizan-Hutter, the Vice Chair of the IASB. So we've just wrapped up the final meeting of 2005, where the board discussed five projects. So that was a pretty good meeting, Andreas.
It was. We don't want to spend time on all the five projects. So we decided for this episode, we will discuss our projects on the statement of cash flows and related matters, the amendments to the fair value option in IAS 28, our latest edition, and our project on the targeted improvements to provisions. And we also have a brief overview over our key achievements in 2025 and share an update about changes on the IASB's work plan. So I shall start with our statement of cash flows and related matters project. This project was added to our pipeline following strong demand from stakeholders in our third agenda consultation. At the December meeting, we discussed three areas. First, we concluded our discussions on possible proposals for extending the requirements in IFRS 18 for management-defined performance measures to include cash flow measures, such as free cash flow. At this meeting, we resolved the significant outstanding questions around adapting the definition and some of the disclosure requirements. This means future proposals would result in entities needing to provide reconciliations and explanations when they use cash flow measures that are not specified in IFRS accounting standards. One of the outstanding questions was which subtotals cash flow measures should be reconciled to. We decided that possible proposals will specify three key subtotals in the statement of cash flows that will not be considered as management-defined performance measures. Instead, they will provide useful anchor points for reconciling cash flow measures. These subtotals are those for each of the three categories in the statement of cash flows of operating activities, investing activities, and financing activities. And secondly, we started discussing how to improve the consistency in classifying cash flows as operating, investing, and financing. Based on extensive stakeholder feedback, we identified several areas where practice varies. We decided to explore solutions to improve consistent classification for acquisition-related payments in business combinations, cash flows from derivatives, and receipts from government grants. We also identified two areas where possible proposals for requirements we are developing to improve the information about non-cash information might also improve consistency in classification. These are the classification of deferred payments and cash flows that involve third-party finance providers. We decided to come back on these topics once the possible proposals for non-cash transactions are further developed. And then lastly, our third discussion was on the matter of diversity in the presentation of cash flows from continuing and discontinued operations. We agreed that a possible proposal requiring an entity to present cash flows from discontinued operations in a separate category of the statement of cash flows. This decision will help improve the clarity and comparability of cash flow information.
So all in all, Andreas, I thought those were productive discussions. And in 2026, we will carry on developing potential solutions to address the classification issues raised by our stakeholders and further refining our proposals for improving cash flow transparency. And we plan to make decisions on the project direction in Q1 2026. Now, let's turn to the next topic in this episode, the Narrow Scope Amendments Project, where we are proposing amendments to the fair value option in IAS 28. We added it to our work plan just last month. The aim of the project is to address diversity in practice regarding the scope of the fair value option in IAS 28, Investments in Associates and Joint Ventures. The fair value option permits specified entities to measure their investments in associates at fair value through profit or loss instead of using the equity method. You might recall that the IASB previously decided to explore potential amendments to these requirements because stakeholders have reported diversity in how they interpret the scope of investments to which the fair value option in IAS 28 applies.
So at our December meeting, we had an interesting discussion and made several key decisions. Although board members expressed different views about which entities should be permitted to apply the fair value option, we decided to propose to clarify that similar entities, which are referred to in that particular paragraph in IAS 28, include those that invest in associates and joint ventures as a main business activity. We acknowledge that we need to move fast with the proposed amendments in IAS 28, as it is important for our stakeholders that they become effective at the same time as IFRS 18, say for any reporting periods beginning on or after 1st of January 2027. The board therefore decided to proceed with the drafting of an exposure draft that we expect to publish in February 2026 with a shortened comment period of 60 days, for which we will seek the necessary approval by the DPOC in early January.
Okay, so now let's turn to our provisions project. In this project, our goal is to make targeted amendments to IAS 37 provisions, contingent liabilities, and contingent assets to help companies apply the requirements more consistently and provide investors with more useful information. After the comment period for the exposure draft closed in March 2025, we've been making steady progress on this project. And in December, we continued our redeliberations on the proposals, focusing on three key areas. First, regarding legal obligations, we decided to revise the criteria proposed in the exposure draft for identifying when an entity has no practical ability to avoid discharging a legal responsibility. We decided that this occurs if either the responsibility is legally enforceable, meaning the counterparty can ask a court to force the entity to discharge the responsibility or pay a penalty, or the counterparty has other rights to take action against the entity, and the economic consequences of not discharging the responsibility would be significantly worse than the cost of discharging it. Second, for constructive obligations, we decided to retain the criterion proposed in the exposure draft for concluding that an entity has no practical ability to avoid discharging a constructive responsibility. Third, on measurement, we decided to retain our proposal in the exposure draft to clarify that the cost included in measuring a provision comprised both incremental costs and an allocation of other costs that relate directly to settling the obligation. But we decided to restrict this requirement to obligations to transfer goods or services. In terms of next steps, we'll continue our redeliberations on the remaining aspects of the exposure draft, and we expect that a decision on the project direction can be made in Q1 2026 once the ISB has reached tentative decisions on requirements for levies.
So that concludes the three projects that we have discussed. Finally, we turn to an important decision that we also made about our work plan in December, and that concerns the timing of the post-implementation review of IFRS 9's hedge accounting requirements. Now, as you might already know, a post-implementation review, or PIR for short, is conducted a few years after a standard has been implemented to see if it is working as intended. We previously discussed this timing at several meetings, but decided it was too early to start. We've been monitoring the implementation of these requirements and considering when to begin the post-implementation review. This question is particularly relevant as quite a few companies, mainly financial institutions, have not yet moved to IFRS 9 and continue to apply IAS 39 for the hedge accounting requirements, as they wanted to assess the outcome of our ongoing project on risk mitigation.
A number of factors have influenced our decision to start the review now. First, entities have now had sufficient time since the 2018 effective date to implement and apply the IFRS 9 requirements. Second, we recently concluded our work on power purchase agreements, which included targeted amendments to the hedge accounting requirements. We also considered the interaction of a PIR on the hedge accounting requirements with our risk mitigation accounting project, as the proposed disclosure requirements are based on the hedge accounting disclosures in IFRS 7. With all of these factors in mind, we did decide to begin the post-implementation review of the hedge accounting requirements in Q1 2026, alongside the consultation period of the exposure draft for risk mitigation accounting, which should provide valuable synergies. Now, it's important to note that within the risk mitigation accounting exposure draft, we have asked specific questions targeted at those entities who have not yet adopted the IFRS 9 hedge accounting and hope to gain valuable insights from responses to those questions. We expect to start a public consultation for the PIR by issuing a request for information in the second half of 2026.
So before we wrap up, we want to take a moment now to look back at 2025. We've made substantial progress on our work plan and continued engagement with stakeholders worldwide. A major focus was our work on the third edition of the IFRS for SMEs accounting standard. It was a major update to the standard aimed at improving the information SMEs provide to users of their financial statements while maintaining the simplicity and proportionality that underpin the standard. This update reflects extensive consultation and feedback during the second comprehensive review. We also advanced our work on the reduced disclosure framework for subsidiaries within groups. We issued amendments to IFRS 19, our standard on subsidiaries without public accountability disclosures, to complete the planned catch-up work following the issuance of the standard last year. Another milestone was the completion of the major revision to our practice statement on management commentary, modernizing and aligning it with today's reporting landscape. And as Linda has already touched on, one of the most significant areas of progress in 2025 has been our work on risk mitigation accounting, a project previously known as dynamic risk management. Interest rate risk is one of the most important risks that financial institutions manage, but existing hedge accounting requirements do not adequately reflect how this risk is managed in practice. Our proposed risk mitigation accounting model seeks to address that gap. Given the significance of the proposal, we have set an extended 240-day comment period to give stakeholders sufficient time to test the model using their own data.
In 2025, we continue to respond to evolving reporting challenges. The treatment of uncertainties in financial reporting has been an area of heightened interest for our stakeholders. We issued illustrative examples to demonstrate how companies can apply existing IFRS accounting standards when reporting the effects of uncertainties in their financial statements. And we issued amendments clarifying how companies should translate financial statements from a non-hyperinflationary currency into a hyperinflationary one. I'd like to mention an important development in our consultative activities. We recently announced the establishment of the Financial Instruments Consultative Group and had the initial meeting this week. This group will support our projects related to financial instruments by providing technical knowledge and practical insights from a diverse range of stakeholders. As I mentioned, the group held its meeting just this week and discussed the IASB's project on amortized cost measurement.
So as we close out this year, we'd like to thank all of our stakeholders for their continued engagement with our work. Your feedback and participation are essential to developing high-quality accounting standards. We wish all our listeners a happy and prosperous new year. We look forward to continuing our important work together in 2026 and bringing you updates on these and other projects throughout the year. Until next time in January 2026, it's goodbye from us.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.